welcome to the PS Midnight Cast.
The show where we were only chasing the 90s.
And where darkness comes to die.
I'm your host, Captain Nostalgia.
Excuse me. And I'm your host, Riff Daddy. Other host, Riff Daddy. What's up?
Nothing. It's ironic that, like, the subject matter we're dealing with in itself is heavy just because it's metal music for this episode. But,
well,
it's weird because, like, our last two episodes have been so heavy, it's refreshing to kind of step back and do something that's a little bit more mellow in substance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something more chuggy. Like a choo-choo.
Oh, man. No. Not feeling that.
Yes, I have a question. We're on here.
Okay.
Who are the pictures behind you? They look old and cool.
So these actually are right where I'm recording right now. I'm recording at my dining room table, and our dining room wall actually has pictures of my wedding with my wife. The top one is her and her bride's party. The left and the right outer are my father-in-law and my wife. And then the photographer actually got a picture of us holding hands while we were doing the knot portion of our ritual or of our vows. And then this picture right here is my best man, a kid named Trey who I used to mentor, and my brother-in-law, and we're all doing the superhero poses. My best man was Superman, I was Green Lantern, my brother-in-law was Batman, and Trey was the Flash.
Well, that's pretty cool. See, some reason they looked like older pictures. That's why I thought it was like some like old grandparents or something like that. They're black and white.
Yeah, it's just they're black and white. For four of them, there's Sibia for the one of our bridal party.
That's pretty neat. Well, I don't have any wedding pictures to show you because I'm not married. So.
Yeah. I don't know. Should we post these pictures up on the Instagram so people can actually know what we're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, it's up to you. I just saw him and got sidetracked. It was like, wait.
So in 90s news, I kind of want to see if you want to touch on this real quick. I know we kind of had like different groups kind of growing up, but there. So a couple years ago, they made a Goosebumps movie, and Nickelodeon is now moving forward next year with a Are You Afraid of the Dark movie.
Saw that. I didn't read it, but I saw it.
Comes out next October.
Oh, is it legit happening? Or is it just like one of those, like, maybe things?
I hope it's legit happening because Nickelodeon announced a project almost 2 years ago that was going to be directed by Jarrett Hess, who directed Napoleon Dynamite and Nacho Libre. And he is going to be doing a Nickelodeon animation universe film that is going to be taking Rugrats, Aro Monsters, Cat Dog, and a couple other properties into kind of this whirlwind adventure. And they announced the project, they announced the director, but I've heard zero about it since. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people just don't even know what it is anymore.
Now, I remember reading about that, but I ain't heard nothing about it since.
Exactly.
Well, Are You Afraid of the Dark is, I wouldn't say it's like has a cult following, but it's one of those things that, like, so many kids, like, our age, a little bit older, grew up watching, and you just hear the mention of it, and you kind of like, oh my god, really? Dude.
Yeah, I'm excited for this, because I really do enjoy Are You Afraid of the Dark. Are You Afraid of the Dark and Goosebumps were two of my favorite shows growing up. So if you're talking about them doing that, I'm super excited and I'm hopeful for it. I'm kind of interested seeing how they're gonna approach it because the way that they approached Goosebumps, I felt like was so perfect. But I want the Are You Afraid of the Dark movie to be so much different. Like I don't want it to be a carbon copy of the Goosebumps films.
Oh yeah, no, I'm with you. I haven't seen that. didn't they do a Goosebumps movie like a couple of years ago?
Yeah, Jack Black was in it. The kid from 13 Reasons Why and Don't Breathe was in it. Then they had the girl who was in The Giver, whose name is totally escaping me right now, but it is one of the best films that I've seen in, like, the last 10 years.
I haven't seen it.
It's streaming now on Netflix. It's funny. It's charming. And it's got heart. And it just combined. Like, the story that they create isn't just... it's not just lending to one story. It's lending to a mixture of these stories. So, I'm kind of curious how they're going to do Are You Afraid of the Dark and not be in the vein, you know, are they going to do New Kids? Are they going to bring back the original cast and do, you know, one big, you know, scary stories? Is it going to be like an anthology film? So I'm kind of curious how they're going to do it.
It'd be like each one be like an hour long. Be kind of cool. Kind of do like a little series, like an hour long series.
I mean, this is a film that's actually going to, from what I'm reading, it's going to be heading to theaters.
Oh, okay.
So it's not going to be like, Hey Arnold, it's not going to be like this upcoming Rocko's Modern Life reboot. It's going to be a legit in-theater film. I'm kind of curious if they'll do it in kind of like the style of like VHS, the VHS series, which, or the ABCs of Death, where you'll have essentially like 10 to 15 minute like anthology features. So it would be kind of cool to see like the Midnight Society kind of take on, maybe they're at like their 20th year reunion in high school and they're sitting around like talking and, you know, telling these ghost stories for old time's sake, but somehow or another the ghost stories end up becoming real. Like, that to me I think would be the best way to approach it.
Oh yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, I mean, it's no secret that we here at the PS Midnight Cast love Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yes, the Midnights, if you guys didn't know, in our title actually comes from Midnight Society.
And we'll let you guess where the PS comes from.
We just love New York, right?
Yeah. So, have you done anything 90s related this week? Besides being a white girl drinking Starbucks?
Yeah, that's new. What have I done 90s related this week? That's a great question. I bought Britney Spears at a thrift store yesterday.
Like, you bought her?
I bought the,
like, she was,
the very first album that she did.
I wouldn't be surprised if she was at a thrift store.
And, and speaking of 90s also, too, I'll send you a picture of this, but I bought this, we did a convention last weekend, and, when I say we, I'm talking about Victims and Villains, but we did a convention last weekend, and, you've been to convention now, so,
yeah.
You know that, there are artists that sell their interpretations of popular pop culture characters, and I bought a Gremlins Rambo poster last weekend, and, oh my goodness, the guy who does it is, he's on Instagram, at Art of Knob, but it is just, it's so cute, and it's so awesome, and I can't wait to hang it in our studio for YouTube reviews and such. So
it's really cool.
My thing has just been really, like, kind of like picking up random 90s things, like nothing related. I almost bought a creepy crawler machine yesterday at the thrift store. If you remember those things.
Yeah. Are those like the little gummies you can make?
Yeah, they were pretty much like,
yeah,
bug versions, the bug and boy version of Easy Bake Oven.
That's right. Those are pretty cool.
What about you?
Well, I'd like to speak briefly in a second about my first con experience, but because it was pretty cool, but as far as like 90s, so I've wrapped up season 3 of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and Monday, I went to the store to get some drinks, and I got some milk, some cereal, because I was out of milk and cereal, and I got Oreos, because they had them there. I finished the box off. I bought it Monday afternoon. I finished it by Tuesday night. That's pretty 90s, I would think.
Did Dude, I...
Eating Oreos and watching Power Rangers. That's pretty 90s.
Because the only place around here that sells them is Walmart. But every time I go to Walmart, like, I feel like there's just a piece of me that has to pick those up just because they were probably the one of the best, if not the best cereal for me personally growing up.
Dude, yeah, they were really good. So good. Well, growing up, like, my nana would buy a lot of weird cereal just to buy it. Because we ate a lot of cereal. And, like, my favorite, I like those a lot. My favorite is hard to find now. I don't know if you've ever had these or anybody listening, but Apple Cinnamon Cheerios.
Yes.
They were awesome. I used to love them, but I can't really find them now. Like,
I don't think they make them anymore.
I don't know. I loved them. And then, you know, they brought back a couple years ago French Toast Crunch, and I can find that every now and then. And then they also, I don't know if you ever had it, the French Toast Crunch, they also now have like Blueberry Toast Crunch.
I saw that, yeah.
And they're really, really good. But, that's my nightmare related. But real quick on my con, past weekend I went to the Alabama Comic Con, and I've never been to a con before, so that was really neat. And it was like spurred moment, like I wasn't going to go. And then Saturday morning I woke up, and I was like, screw it, I'm going to go, whatever, I'll go check it out. So I get there, and I end up spending money on pops, and bought some pretty cool pops, and then I wasn't gonna pay for celebrity meet and greets, but I was like, you know what? Like, I walked by, and Ron Simmons, this wrestler, he used to wrestle with Farouk. He was sitting there, like, no one was talking to him. I was like, screw it, I'm gonna do it. So I go give him money for an autograph, talk to him for a little bit, and then I'm walking through, and I go upstairs, and there's Rancid. The guy played Rancid from Power Rangers Time Force. Again, that's my favorite season of Power Rangers. I'm like, crap. I'm just going to pay money for celebrity meet and greet again. So I paid money for autographing a picture, talked to him a little bit, then go back downstairs. Then I run into the lady who did voice the Mona from Gargoyles. And if y'all know me, you know that's like my top favorite cartoon besides Hey Arnold. Again, pay the money to meet and greet with her. And then Jason David Frank was there. I didn't get a chance to meet him because he was charging $80.
Sounds about right. If he was going to charge anything less than $100, I'd be honestly surprised because one of Victim's old hosts that still shows up every now and then, but the poet, he's a huge JDF fan, and he said that it was roughly around $80 to $100 to meet him at Awesome Con last year, but he makes it worth it because he interacts with you like, it's kind of like a package deal, like, he'll do, you know, pictures. He'll do, like, selfie videos for your Instagram. You get an autographed picture. So it's like there's a lot that comes with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it's personally a little bit too much to meet a person.
Yeah, it is. Like, I lucked out, though, because I went back Sunday because my buddy had a pass that I could have. I went back Sunday, and he was doing a panel. So like he was there Sunday, too, and he was doing a panel because he was supposed to stay all day, but he had to get to China. So he did like a meet and greet for like an hour, and then he was going to do a panel. Well, the panel wasn't too crowded. Everyone who wanted to meet him came Saturday. So he comes in. He comes in and goes, hey, look, if you didn't get a chance to come and shake my hand or get an autograph, just come over here. So I got a chance to get up and go shake his hand at least. I didn't get a picture because there's people like bum rushing trying to get to him. But and then he took like 30 minutes to like sit there and answer our questions and talk to us. So like that was really cool. I got to like at least shake his hand and ask him a question and like kind of sit down on a panel. That was really neat.
And that was JDF?
Yeah. That was really neat that he did that. Like he took the time to do that. But I sat in that panel and then Ron Simmons did a panel, the wrestler. And then there was a panel there from a Facebook group called Birmingham Slams, a wrestling group, and that was the worst panel I've ever sat through in my entire life.
What made it so bad?
Okay, you might not get this because you're not a wrestling fan, but like these wrestling fans are kind of fans of fans like me who follow WWE, but are more so like into indies, but also don't freak out over mainstream stuff as much. These fans are all about like the current like pop culture popular topics, but they say, hey, we're a wrestling group, so we're going to talk about all wrestling companies, but when you mention one, they don't know what it is and don't want to talk about it.
Wow.
So like they were just in there just like just the most like mainstream things, like Like, there's this one kid was like, hey, you do know that Candice LeRae is married to Johnny Gargano, right? No freaking, like, no, duh. They said on TV the other day. Like, come on, dude. My buddy Jay wouldn't let me leave. I was like, I have to get out of here. No, you gotta sit here. You gotta sit through it. Like, no, I have to leave. This is torture.
I would imagine that someone like you and someone like Larry are, like, as big as wrestling fans as you guys are, like, to have a group that, you know, self-proclaims that we cover all wrestling, and yet you don't know, that even as a fan of, like, of myself, because, like, if I am, you know, classified as a pop culture geek, I'm going to try and digest as much pop culture as possible. But that would be like coming up to me at a convention and being like, hey, do you know who Doctor Who is? And being like, what? Or Power Rangers, you know, or like, you know, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, you know, like all of these like subgroups that like I might not appreciate as much, but I still know and I still go out of my way to research and these companies.
Yeah, it's like I don't know everything about stuff like that, but I know what it is. I know character names. I mean, I know about it. But yeah, it's just so funny because like everybody was asking questions to the people hosting it, and finally I raised my hand. Like, yeah, what's your question? And I was like, okay, so the New Japan Cup, Zack Sabre Jr., does he beat Okada? And they're like, this one dude looked like a deer in a headlock. He was like, oh, it'd be a swerve. How is it a swerve? he has submitted 4 top guys in New Japan. How is that a swerve of him beating Okada? Nice. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I looked at my buddy Jay, and my buddy Jay was like in tears because he could tell I was so miserable.
That's so funny.
I know, it was so funny. But me and Larry have something coming up this week where he's covering the mainstream stuff, I'm covering the indie stuff, so it should be a pretty interesting thing. So when this goes up, it'll be up. So y'all can go watch it. It'll be kind of an archive thing, but y'all can go check it out and see if you just hear someone like me, someone who follows more of the mainstream wrestling things, kind of come together to do something cool.
Yeah, it's I'm excited to kind of see that because obviously I don't have a stake in it, but I like I said I appreciate people that do, and I enjoy learning. So like when you're like, oh hey, I'm gonna do this wrestling moment, like for me. Like being a non-wrestling fan and like experiencing those moments for the first time, I find that there's a little bit more enjoyment in it for me. I'm not saying that you're turning me into a wrestling fan. I'm just saying that
I like learning. I mean, you haven't turned me into a Rousehead Fred fan yet, so.
That's true. They've been on our show twice.
And I still don't care. Oh, man. So I don't think we've did this the last time, but do you have a hidden gem?
Hidden gem. Honestly, I don't think I've ever said this one before, but I have been like spending a lot more time on my Genesis, and I've been spending a lot more time going through the Toy Story game on Genesis. And I'm a huge Toy Story fan, and I'd never like played that game growing up, so like
to
get it and like play through it, I'm on level like 7 or 8 now, so I'm enjoying it. Like that's my hidden gem because I feel like if you grew up in the 90s, you might not necessarily know you might not necessarily know about it, but I know about it now, and I feel it was a hidden gem to me at least.
I never played it. Well, that just reminded me. I guess I'll give this one as one. My buddy at work modded my Super Nintendo Classic, and he put a game on there that I didn't know existed. It was a WCW Super Brawl for Super Nintendo. Never knew I never knew that WCW put a game out that was before their PS1 games. Like I had no idea. And like the main people in the game were like Brian Pillman, Ron Simmons is a world champion, Sting, Surfer Sting, and like Dustin Rhodes, and I don't know. It's not a fun game. It's a pretty bad game, but. This one was a wrestling game that I never knew existed, and it was pretty cool.
I mean, bad or not, like at least you can like say that, hey, it exists, and I've played it.
Yeah, yeah, I had no idea it existed. Like a lot of people that I talked to that are wrestling fans that play video games didn't know it existed, and they're like, holy crap! I'm like, yeah, I had no idea that they made this. I guess it was so bad that it didn't get talked about very much. I don't know.
That's funny.
But yeah, that's pretty cool. Oh man, so we'll get into what we're here to do today.
Yeah, so we've talked a little bit about music throughout the course of this episode already, but we're here to talk mostly about music. This is our main topic conversation for this one. It's Zayo, a specific album that I cannot remember the name for right now.
When Blood and Fire Bring Rest. And it was released in May 1998, so that would mean this year would be 20 years. Am I correct there?
Yes.
98?
Yes.
Which I'm seeing them in June, and I feel like they might play some of these songs since it's a 20-year anniversary. I hope. That'd be freaking cool. So let's get into it. Zayo, When Blood and Fire Bring Rest. It was released May 19th, 98 on Solid State. Solid State, not a very well-known record label. No, I'm just kidding. This is their first album that featured vocalist Dan, I can't say his name right, Wyant. I was calling him Dan.
There you
featuring
go.
Dan after the departure of Sean Jonas, who, if y'all don't know who Sean Jonas is, he did the first record, Splinter Shards. Then he went to do, which, in my opinion, is one of the best FaceTime bands ever made, Symphony in Peril. And he's now a youth pastor. Really, really cool guy. Okay. And then also first album featuring guitarist Russ Cagle and bass player Russ Cogdale and Brett Dieter. So this album, before we get into the album itself, kind of talk about like what this album was when it came out. It was around the time the Christian hardcore bands, even before this album, Zayo was one of those, like, typical, or not typical, but one of the, like, in the late 90s, Christian hardcore were the Christian, was, lyrically, were just very Christian-based, spiritual-based, and evangelical-based. And then, when Zayo came out with this record, Dan was talking about things that people in the Christian hardcore scene, or in churches, didn't talk about. Like, he talked about suicide, losing people, struggling with your faith. The only reason why why he hasn't taken his life is because of his faith. Like, stuff like that. It wasn't getting talked about at shows very much. And this album, and, like, musically, too, like, the album before this, they were more of, like, a hardcore band. And then when they did this, like, Dan's vocals were very different, different from Sean's vocals. The music was different. Like, it was, like, taking, like, black metal vocals or, like, very, like, sludgy, like, sounding metal riffs and this real heaviness. And in the Labeled podcast, it's real funny, Labeled podcast, they talked about, like, when they first switched over to Dan and was writing for this record, they sent, like, a little demo tape to Solid State. And they were like, dude, this is so bad. How can you do this to us? Like, you just switch vocals. This is so bad. And then, like, a few months later, they recorded the first track on this song, or wrote the first track on this song, Lies of Serpents, River of Tears. And, like, all the negative comment about how they were now was just gone. That song blew them away. It was so different. And then people have noted, like, seeing them when Dan joined in that era was just so different, because it was just, like, everyone was wearing, like, baggy clothes with all the same, here these kids are, and, like, tight clothes, really shy kids, just going crazy on stage, just throwing their gear around, just going just complete chaos on the stage. So that's kind of, Zayo kind of made a huge impact on the Christian scene, to where it was, they made it okay to show emotion. They made it okay to show that you're struggling with suicide or death, or struggling just to live, or struggling with your faith. They made it okay to talk about these things. And then, of course, as you've seen since 98 until now, I mean, a lot of Christian bands are more open about more real things than just talking about God, which I think is, like, very good to have in a Christian hardcore band, Christian hardcore scene, because, I mean, I'll say real quick, like, for me, musically, like, I always say it like this: music saved my life, Jesus saved my soul. I don't know if I'd be who I am today as a Christian if it wasn't for Christian hardcore music and bands like Zayo, and later on bands like Norma Jean, Chariot, stuff like that. This is real, really real, talking about real things. But before we get into it, I want to hear Josh's thoughts on Zayo before he listened to this record.
So this was a first album for me. And usually when we try to pick topics for these shows, we're trying to expose ourselves to more stuff that we hadn't experienced as a child. So this one was something that I had never listened to. And I grew up on Zayo. I listened to A Funeral for God and a couple of the other albums that had kind of preceded that one. But as far as, like, you know, hearing the 90s stuff, like, I had never really heard them. And this was, so this morning, like, sitting down prepping for this episode, this really isn't my cup of tea. And we were talking about that off air, like, you know, there's too much chugs. A lot of it musically sounds a lot of the same. And I can see the similarities in this album and also in The Act of Depression from when we had covered Under Oath back in November. So for me, I always argue with, I always kind of, you know, get into polite discussions with people about music like this. August Burns Red is a great example. A lot of people like Thrill Seeker, and a lot of people say that Messengers is a fantastic album.
I'm one of those people.
I always argue that, for me, personally, I don't think August Burns Red, like, they were talented, but they went to the next level of talent after Constellations. Because Constellations was so different and showed so much progression. And you get a lot of progression that exists in this album. And I didn't know a lot of the stuff that you had told me, like you had just talked about, you know, with the influence of this album. And that makes me appreciate this album a lot more, knowing that it was such a different, that it was actually speaking realism into a audience that was mostly focused on, you know, evangelical and, you know, worship lyrics. Like, I feel like to have a relationship with God, you really need to be real with people. Like, you can't just be, you know, this not, let me rephrase this. Not every day that you spend in God's presence or every day that you live your life is a mountaintop moment. You have so many valley moments as well, and you need to learn to praise God in both of those. So there's a lot of praising. There's also a lot of, like, you know, worship content in this album that I really appreciate it. But, you know, talking about things like depression and suicide from the stage and from an audience that's mostly not hearing about it, dude, that's how revolutions start. That's how, you know, people get out there. And so I have so much respect for them, but I don't know if this is an album that I would necessarily, like, throw into again. Like, you know, you had called it a classic, but to me, like, it was just the chugs were a little bit too much at certain points. I was like, I was like, okay, I guess, like, writing in the late 90s for some of these bands, you know, Zayo and Under Oath, in order to be, like, memorable or good, your songs have to be 8 minutes long, and 7.5 minutes of that has to be chugs.
Hey, man, I'm all for it. Well, I guess you could say it was there, too. I mean, in my opinion, they have a lot of classics, though. I mean, this was a good one. Splinter's Charge was good, and so on, right? Funeral God was good. Liberate was really good. Their subtitle was really good. I mean, Prey to Chaos was really good. I mean, they have put out a lot of really good records. I mean, they really have. But before we get into track by track, I wanted to just briefly run through, kind of give everybody a mindset who is not as familiar with the record like you were, and kind of help me appreciate it more. So these songs talk about someone who died in a car accident, someone committing suicide, watching someone on life support taking their last breath. There's a track, To Think of You. It's about Dan. He lost some friends to suicide, and he lost someone. It's just about losing people in general. And he dedicates it to three people who he lost, who all put guns in their mouths. Like, there's a clip on the Labeled podcast from a live show of them playing to think of you, and in it, like, you hear him talking, but he sounds so, like, sad and depressed, like, worked to tears, and he's like, he's talking about how, like, the song goes out to, and he named the people and was like, because they all died, they all put guns to their mouths, and then he just breaks into the song, which is something you probably don't hear that often at a Christian hardcore show. A quick background on Dan and what led him to write this stuff lyrically. Dan lost his brother in a car accident. His brother got him into metal, and like after his brother died, no one ever talked about it, and that was really hard on him. He talks about how like, he still remembers everything he wore and everything. Before I finish, they have a DVD they put out a few years ago where he talks a lot about this stuff, and if y'all want to check that out, I've got what DVD's called. But anyway, the passenger in the car with his brother, who also died, was a huge impact on his life. So he lost his brother and really like a role model in a way. And then the person who died in the car, his cousin, that guy's cousin, committed suicide. He couldn't handle the loss. And Dan was friends with that guy, too. So that car wreck led to him losing two people and then a guy committing suicide. And then when they were practicing and writing music for To Think of You, he got a call from his mom. And she told him that his little brother's best friend, who he grew up knowing as well, was really close with, killed himself over a girl breaking up with him. So, and then not long after, he said he lost a good friend to a hunting rifle going off accidentally. So, going into this record, he lost a lot of people. And then after his friends are dead, he realizes that his beliefs is the only reason why he's still alive. He wanted to get across, like I mentioned earlier, there's nothing wrong with being open about being sad and depressed. But as he went on with all this stuff, he talks about he planned his own suicide at one point. He knew that with some towels under the door and a full tank of gas that he could end his life, and he was going to go through with it. And he said he credits God, his faith in God, from keeping him from doing that. Like he said in that interview, which today I'm pretty sure he's not a Christian anymore, but like in that interview he did in this DVD, he says like, you know, God, like if he wasn't for God, he wouldn't probably be alive right now. So that's kind of just like a brief thing before we get into track by track. What do you think about any of that, Josh?
I think it's really crucial. And as you're kind of talking about the impact that those events had on him as a lyricist and Zao as a whole band, I think that, you know, 1 John talks about, you know, no one can be without sin. If you claim to be without sin, then you call God a liar, and you also declare yourself a liar. And I think that if you are presenting this image of, you know, constant highs and smiles, like there's something clearly wrong with you. Like we saw that in doing Heaven's Gate, where, you know, Doe, after he lost T, was, you know, before losing T, he was really on this high, and like had this like quest and like this vision, and then he lost T, and he really had to, you know, recalibrate and kind of think about, you know, how that really affected him. And so I think that it's amazing that they're like, we have this platform, we, you know, let's use our voice to speak out on these issues. Like that's the reason we do podcasts is, you know, yes, we're super passionate about music and 90s and video games and pop culture, but the main reason we do this show is to talk to people and to get these conversations going and to speak into communities where, you know, suicide's not being spoken about that as much as we would like it to be. You know, hope is not being, that light's not going out unless, you know, there's people and there's content that's being released like us, like this album, and really talking about how these events affect us. I think that it's necessary, and I think that it needed to happen. And that's the reason why I might not necessarily enjoy this album, but I will definitely say that it holds my highest amount of respect, because he didn't want to put out an album that was like, you know what, I'm going to put out an album that is going to be dealing mostly with, you know, these fake events, but I'm going to get real, and I'm going to talk about how these events shaped my faith and how these had an effect on me as a person. Because experiencing one suicide is, it's hard. But experiencing three of them and a death of a friend, that's got to be even harder.
Yeah, and on top of, like, his brother died in the car wreck before all that, I mean, like, it's crazy. I mean, I couldn't imagine doing all that. I mean, we've lost friends before to suicide and, you know, just death in general. And you know how tough it is, but all happening, like, within a year or two, in a year, 2 year span or so, like, I don't know where my mindset would be if I went through something like that.
Same. Like, I just, I don't know how it would be. And when I was 18, like, losing, 17, when I was losing Adam to suicide, like, it was incredibly hard for me because I had just come out of a season of depression myself and a season of self-harm and self-hatred. And to kind of be on the flip side of that, like, I mean, it just gives you perspective that life is so precious and life is so short. And you really don't think about those or encounter those things to the depth that I think that they need to be revered almost.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're right, man. Well, let's get into this album track by track. Track number one, Lies of Serpents, River of Tears. I love how it starts out. Your eyes search for me. Your eyes search for me. So sick.
when you're talking about music, the first song has to hook you.
Oh yeah.
And within the first 30 seconds of this, like I've kind of talked a little bit negatively about this album, but the start of this album, it does not really set the pace for what it's going to be, but that soft into embracing this, I really do enjoy this song, and even the lyrical content with embracing the lies of the enemy, you know, dealing with redemption, and just kind of knowing his mindset of where he was, like, it's a good song. It's a good start to a
great
good song.
It's a great song. That's the song that got people heads turned on their new era when they got Dan and everybody in the band. Like, that was one of those songs, like, holy crap, this is different kind of things. Like you mentioned a second ago, talking about the lyrics, I love the lyrics where it's like, for so long I wanted to come home, held back by lies of serpents and tongues of brothers. Like, I can tell this song definitely tells of, like, the longing of needing God to hold on to, but the sin and brokenness has held you back, and, like, you're just ready to let go, you know, like, people around you who aren't really believers, or people just bring you down, and, like, the enemy himself, like, I feel like the intensity of the music, too, and the lyrics with Dan's vocals kind of just shows that, like, the agony you go through, in a way. It's definitely a pretty real song to me. It's one of my favorite songs by Zayo.
Yeah, I love the rawness in this, too. I feel like the level of just rawness and intensity in this album, you can tell that it was written from a broken place, both lyrically and musically. And to me, I always prefer the music and the lyrics to kind of go hand in hand. Like, I don't want to be like, I really like the lyrical content to this song, but the music to it sucks. Or the music content's great, but the lyrical content sucks. But I feel like that these go together pretty well.
Oh, yeah. All right, I'll go to track number two, which we kind of mentioned a second ago. To Think of You is to Treasure an Absent Memory, which we spoke about. Like, that was about losing a lot of people in his life to suicide and to death in general. What do you think about this song?
My favorite part of the song is the clean vocals, and, like, kind of as it goes to, like, the clean vocals and, like, his dirty voice, like, when they're accompanying each other, you know, talking about as they're singing the album's title over and over again. I thought that was a good, I mean, to this album's credit, there is still a heavy nature to this song, but I felt like this was kind of a step in the right direction because it showed a lot of different musical styles accompanied into this one you know, what is it, like 4 minutes? So, I thought it was a nice balance of, like, you know, they would do the breakdowns, but then they would also have those kind of, like, softer moments that would build up into another breakdown. Like, I enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah. I really enjoyed that little breakdown in the end. I think of you. Oh, dang, oh, yeah. Like, I don't know, like, his vocals and like, the breakdowns in this song were just spot on to me, man. Like, it was just, like, such, like, an emotion, like, desperate cry out. It sounded like his vocals were just, like, so raw and real, like, just so gritty. I don't know, I wish I could scream like that, but I'd probably strain my throat if I did that.
I agree with that statement. Not about you straining your throat, but about his vocals just kind of, you know, being on, like, 11 on this track.
Oh, yeah. Which I would strain my throat really bad if I tried. Track number 3, A Fall Farewell. What do you think about this one?
I kind of got that sense of, you know, loss for this one as well. I mean, talking about subject matter. Obviously, when you experience the amount of tragedies that this gentleman has experienced, you're gonna go on and write just more than one song. And I feel like this is another song that deals heavily with that. I felt musically it reminded me a lot of Act of Depression by Under Oath.
Yeah.
It still had that instrumentally, like, heavy, but I feel like this is the point in the album where I kind of started getting tired of the chugs, and I'm like, oh, 7 more tracks to go.
Oh, yeah. Well, I like the lyric, the machines that kept you alive were careless. Did you ask them to forgive you? Like, I definitely feel like it's telling someone who's messed up a lot and is now, like, suffering at this point. It kind of gives a thought of, like, you know, the machines that they put you on when you're really, like, terminally ill can only do so much, but, like, they can't save our souls. So that's kind of what I got from the song, you know, with that lyric. And even the track itself, called A Fall Farewell, I mean. But I thought it was a really good, another, like, emotion-driven song about watching someone, you know, on life support and dealing with death again. I mean...
And that they're also told in an honest way. Like, it's not like, oh, yeah, I have this friend that's on life support. Everything's going to be okay. Like, dude, even if you're proclaiming and saying that you trust in God with all your heart, there is still humanity level to you that you are struggling in those moments to say, God, where do I find you in this? Where is grace in this? Where is hope in this? And, you know, I'm anxious to kind of. I enjoy that, you know. I enjoyed the real nature to this album, and to this song.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, with this song, like, a couple of summers ago, I lost my great grandfather to brain cancer, and, like, he was more like my grandfather because the way that things were set up, like, my grandparents were my parents, and then him and my grandma were my grandparents, but he was a lot younger than normal great grandparents would be for someone my age. But, like, when it came to the last few months of him with his brain tumor, like, my aunt who he lived with, I heard her kids were, like, wanting to keep him on treatments and the machine to keep him going. I'm like, look, I don't want to sound heartless, but he's suffering because you're not ready to let go. Like, I have faith, like, he's a believer. I have faith that God's going to take care of him. Like, something's got to give, you know, like, quit making him suffer, do this. Like, this is only keeping him alive, is this machine. He knows where he's going. I have faith that he knows where he's going. Like, come on. Like, I don't know. That's kind of a heartless way to approach it, but that's kind of how I was at that point. And then, so this song was kind of, it related to me a lot with going through that and still missing him. I mean, his house down there is on the roof of my house, and no one's went in to redo it. It's still the same how he left it. I go into his little building time to time and just, like, chill out in his old chair. And, you know, it's still something I deal with to this day, but, you know, it was definitely related to the song a lot.
I understand that. Like, I feel like that's a message that kind of everyone can understand, because you all always have those crisis of moments. But, you know, I feel like when you press into God and, you know, during these tough situations, you're searching, and, you know, scripture says, you know, if you draw near to me and I'll draw near to you, you know, there's also those moments of, you know, just resting in that peace, like you're talking about. You know, it's not a cold, I don't think it's a cold way of phrasing it. I think it's a real way of putting it is, you know,
mm-hmm.
when you have those faith that, you know, that there's a peace that God gives you saying, all right, I don't know how this is going to work out. I don't know how this is going to end, but I'm putting my peace in you and you're placing your peace within me. And I find myself a lot of times, even with financial situations, having that peace.
Oh yeah, dude, for sure. Track 4, Go to March. Wasn't really a big fan of this song, but it was, to me, it was another really heavy emotional track about feeling lost and weak and feeling this God's strength and love in a way like never before, only getting that strength by God. What do you think about this track?
I loved the opening riff.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that it showed progress for them as an artist. But, again, chug. And I'm just like, bring back the opening progression. But, you know, I really, I love the lyrical content of this song. But, chug. It's one of those things that it kind of takes it away from me a little bit. It kind of takes me out of it, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. It was okay. Track 5 is Ember. I love the opening riff.
Yes.
To it, and then the breakdown. Like, it just all got really, really, really hard. But another, to me, yeah, I thought it was another emotional track of just, like, feeling God in your life. And, like, where Dan was at this point, kind of like being an example to the people around him. Like, hey, like, it's okay to struggle. It's okay to feel depressed and sad. But, like, there's a God that can get you through it. You know, kind of like that whole thing. Come on, Tacoma, what do you think about this track?
It ended super weirdly.
Yeah, it did.
I was sitting down drinking coffee this morning listening to it. And I'm, like, following along with the lyrics on my phone. And it just ends, like, super abruptly. And the next track starts. And I'm like, what just happens?
Oh, no, right? Did you follow the lyrics from darklyrics.com?
No, I don't remember the website I used.
Well, credit to them for Under Oath, too. Dark Lyrics is my go-to for metal lyrics.
No, I think mine was like something like lyrics A to Z or A to Z lyrics or something.
Oh, I know
like
you're talking
that.
About. My go-to is Dark Lyrics and PunkLyrics.com.
That's probably because you primarily listen to those two genres of music.
Yeah, pretty much. And hardcore goes on either one, so either one will have a hardcore band.
There you
go. Track number 6, Ravage Ritual, I thought was a banger of a track, touching on someone getting their ideas of Christ mixed up due to misconceptions of Christ and becoming false to it all and shunning the sacrifice, really. I mean, it was just one of those, like, kind of being real, like, hey, this is not the right way. This is not, like, what you're teaching and talking about is false kind of thing. It was a pretty heavy track. What do you think about it?
I liked the opening, the opening that this, I feel like a lot of these, I love their openings, and then they do something that I'm like, it's good for, like, the first 30 seconds, but
yeah.
No, I really do like this. I felt like the progression that this song carries with the kind of the more somber music tone to this song, and then kind of building, speaking, having the spoken word scriptures over it, and building to that heaviness. If you can build the heaviness, I feel like that's one of the reasons I really enjoy metal, is because I love something that can start one way but completely transform into something completely different that I wasn't expecting. And this song definitely piqued my interest for that. The lyrical content in it, like you were saying, is good. And then just the progression and design of this entire song, I feel like, is perfection. Like, this is probably, this song and the last track is probably my two favorite songs on this record.
It was pretty good. I liked it. I wouldn't know if it's one of my top favorites of the record, but it's an enjoyable track. Track 7, 15, Rima, I think that's spelled or pronounced. thought it was a pretty hard hitting track. Just speaking on putting trust in God and confessing and resting in Him and listening. I thought it was just a good track. I mean, what do you think about it?
The lyrical content, again, I love the hope. And I love the fact that this is talking about really trusting in the Lord, because it's a, especially with a lot of the albums that this album, the themes of this album were written from, the experiences that came out of this album, you can definitely tell that it is hard to put faith into, an entity, whatever you believe. Well, I believe in God, and it's hard to believe in Him after all these hard events. You often, I think, at these events, you find yourself one of two ways. You either cling harder to God, or you get angry and never want anything to do with Him again. And so I like that they took that positive approach, and they're talking real about it. But there's this one had this song where it felt like it was too long. And I don't know why, it just kept going, and I'm like, it's still going. It's still going. They must have made this one in the studio with Energizer batteries, because it's going. It's going.
Yeah, it's going. It's going, man. Track 8, For Fair Desire, I thought was a very emotional track. I could really feel that this was like a story of being broke and being like brought to the edge, and the only thing that you can really rely on is God to pick you up from the edge that you're on. I really like this track a lot. I don't know if it's my favorite. Might be like my third favorite. My favorite is To Think of You, but from this album. But I really like the track a lot, though. What do you think about it?
I liked the a lot of the majority. I felt like, oh man, these things start like I would probably place this within my top five of the songs in this album. Even though there's only 10, this is on the this is on the best side, better side. I love the transition between the first two verses instrumentally. I love the fact that the way that it starts on the vocals. Really, really, really dug that. I thought that this one musically showed progression that you haven't seen in this since March. And so, I don't know. Like, to me, it's like Motionless in White is a great example. Creatures, the album. I love Creatures.
Oh, yeah.
It's like one song's okay, and then the next song is fantastic, and then the next song's okay, and then the next song's fantastic. And I felt the same way about a lot of the lyrical content here. I was just like, or about the musical content here, I was like, okay song, is this almost over song? Great song. And so I felt like for this one, it definitely fell in the better portion of the album. I felt like this was a stronger song on after the last couple albums, or last couple songs, rather.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Track 9, which is the last track lyrics on this album. This is the last one. It's an instrumental. Track 9, The Latter Rain. This is a really heavy track. I thought about the truth being brought to false teachings, a lack of like knowing the truth and the knowledge of God, bringing understanding before like the end of times. That's kind of all I got from it. What do you think about it?
This is at this point, as I'm listening to this, I'm texting you and I'm saying, I'm picking the next subject we're doing.
But then I had a good pick later on, different Donner.
Because as I'm listening to this song, I'm writing in my notes under this track, is this still going on? Because this is a 6-minute song.
I know.
But I will give it, like, there's a point in here where it's like, it kind of like gets quiet and then it builds up to a breakdown. And that to me was fantastic, because like, it was such a smooth transition. But for like 90% of the song, I'm like, it's still going on. Same track. I'm like sitting here just slowly watching my needle on Spotify like go second by second. I'm like, man, this feels like an eternity.
Yeah, come on now, hurry up. Yeah, dude, that's kind of like how I felt when we were doing Under Oath at the Depression, because every song was like 8 minutes long.
Come on, which is make a song that's only like 5 minutes. There's no need for a 6 minute song.
Yeah, that's funny. Then the last track, Violets, is an instrumental. I thought it was pretty cool. I liked it.
Love it. Probably one of the musically most diverse that's on this song, that's on this track. Oh, yeah. And there's no lyrics like you had mentioned. And this is probably my second favorite song on this track, on this album, just because I love the diversity in it. And I would have loved to see the diversity that this song displays riddled throughout the album rather than just compiled all into one track. Like, I would have liked to see a little bit of this song sprinkled throughout the entire album.
That'd be pretty cool. So we're at the end of this record, track by track. So out of 5 spin kicks, what would you give this?
Oh, putting me on the spot. 2.
I give it a 3.5.
Lyrical content in this is great. It's super relatable. It's groundbreaking for its time. But however, at the same time, and it's intense and it's passionate. However, there's just not enough diversity in here for me. I feel like that's the problem with a lot of these bands that came out around in that genre around this time, was that there wasn't so much diversity. And that's the reason I have such a problem with Demon Hunter too, is they're just not diverse. They're just not my cup of tea, but I understand that there's a market out there for it. I'm just not the market.
Oh, yeah, people. I mean, obviously they're doing something that works, because they're still relevant. People are still getting the tattoo. People are still buying their records when they come out. Like, there's something they're doing right, but it just doesn't resonate with all of us. I mean, but there's something they're doing that's working, and they've managed to stay on tooth and nail the entire time while doing it. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't know if they ever went to another label for a little bit or not. I have no idea, but as far as I know, they're still a tooth and nail, and they've been doing things right for a long time.
Honestly, I don't think they ever got big enough to be offered any other from any other label, because if you are an encyclopedia of useless knowledge like myself, Under Oath, actually, their label was their contract with Solid State and Tooth and Nail was actually up after Define the Great Line, but they stayed with Solid State for the next 2 albums. So,
Well, let's not talk about what this next one's gonna sound like. maybe on Victims, when it comes out, we can talk about it.
Yeah, I kind of regret posting that we were gonna do an episode about it.
Oh wait, we did.
Yeah, so I have to kind of stick to that.
We're gonna do it, and it's gonna be rough, because these 2 singles they have out is not promising. I mean, hey, if you're listening to this and you like it, put more power to you. Like, that's your thing, but it's not for us.
No, not
it's
at all.
Definitely not for us.
But speaking of sad things, we're skipping over Wrestling Moment and music for this week to kind of pay an homage to someone that. An industry that really meant something to us as kids growing up in the 90s. One of the co-founders of Blockbuster passed away. So what are your fondest memories from Blockbuster?
Well, we never really got a Blockbuster until, I want to say, maybe 2001, 2002. My mom worked at it for a little bit. And I just remember, me and my dad would go in. And, I'd always get a box of little Crunch Bites. You know what I'm talking
about?
Yeah. Those are good. We get a box of those, and we get a movie or two. And I was always renting video games, and I remember I'd always rent SmackDown 2 No-Year-Old. I always played on PS1. And then my mom, whenever, old movies would go out, she would bring, 3 movies home all the time. She worked there for probably, 3 or 4 months or so, and she'd bring some movies home. And of course, she stayed friends with people after she left, and would go in and hit up the sales that, they put movies on sale. And I'd get, I remember back when DVDs were getting more of a thing, I'd go in and get, I could get like, I think it was like four DVDs for like $20, I think.
The sales on the, that they would often do, like, were insane, because what they would do is they would get so much bulk stuff, and within, like, if you waited like a month, their selection, they would easily restart redoing their selection, so they would have them out for like those deals, like 5 for $20, and I was like, I always remember thinking, man, love Blockbuster. I hope it never goes out. I nearly wept the day our Blockbuster closed.
Well, yeah, like, so Blockbuster, the one we had was in Gardendale, which is a town that's like 15, 20 minutes from where I live. So we had a movie gallery in Warrior, which is a town that's like 9, 5, 7, 9 minutes away. So I was more going with the movie gallery. But before that, we had a guy named Steve who had his own little movie store in Kimberly. And it was a little, it wasn't huge. I mean, it was, it had two rooms in it, but it wasn't like gigantic. But we went to him like every weekend. And my uncle, y'all heard me talk about, a huge wrestling fan. He'd go and rent wrestling tapes that he'd get in. And then usually in the next couple of months, we'd go in. But hey, I'm taking these off the shelf because I'm bringing new ones in. Do you want them? He'd give them to my uncle for, you know, next to nothing, maybe a couple of dollars or for free a lot. And the movie store was a big deal because, like, growing up in the 2000s with my uncle, we'd go to movie gallery about every Friday night. He rent a couple of movies. He'd rent, like, some movies that were, like, rated R for him and his girlfriend to watch, and he would rent me something that I wanted to watch, and which is how I got into Strangers. He rented it, and, hey, you should watch this movie. And I think he was trying to scare me. He didn't know that my little demented mind would like it. So it was a pretty huge deal for me and my uncle, and then my mom and dad, too. We'd always go rent movies and stuff, and then, like, I had a buddy named Brandon. His name was Brandon, too. We'd always spend the night together in sixth grade, and his parents would always take us to the movie gallery to rent video games to play for the weekend, which is how I fell in love with NBA Ballers. Anyway, I wasn't hugely, like, connected to Blockbuster as I was movie gallery because it was closer, but the fact, like, my mom worked there, and, like, I would still go. Like, we had the Blockbuster up until, when did the years go away? Like,
ours went away in 2010.
Okay, so we had ours up until probably around then in Gardendale. And I just remember I would go in there every now and then and just see if they had anything on sale that I could buy, that I would want to buy. So that was really cool. Have you seen the video going around of the Blockbuster that still exists in Alaska?
Yes. I actually follow them on Twitter.
I need to do that. Because I want to go.
It's called The Last Blockbuster, which actually, to be fair, is not a correct terminology, because when Blockbuster as a whole company actually shut down, the franchisees were actually given license as to whether or not they wanted to continue going, and a lot of them said we still want to go. And I think the closest one is, like, actually a halfway point between me and you is actually in Kentucky. There's still one open.
I think you're right. I'll look that up,
because
I'd like to go,
dude. we should make a road trip of it and just go. I still have my Blockbuster card. I think it's in my wallet, actually. When this happened, I reached out to social media and I just wanted to kind of get people's reactions. You know, what was it about this, that you have such fond memories of? And, Ryan Kahn said, "Be kind, rewinds," and love that phrase growing up. Like, oh man. I actually have a Blockbuster shirt that has a smiley face on it. It says "Be kind, rewind," and then it has the Blockbuster logo.
Hell yeah.
Daniel Stidham said, "It's so weird to think of Blockbuster as a struggling relic that was shoved aside by the digital age. I remember when it came into town and started pushing out the mom and pop video stores, though I do recall that once it started trying to compete with Netflix, its return in store policy made for nice quick turnarounds. I remember renting Miller's Crossing and Bart and Frank in the same week and getting a double dose of Coen Genius. Do you remember the kind of what are your thoughts on digital age kind of coming in and you know now being the standard for video rentals?
I mean, it's a lot more convenient because you can rent it or you can buy it when it's able to be bought. It's more convenient because you don't have to leave your house. You can just like pop up your Roku, your Apple TV, or whatever you use, and just go and buy it and watch it, which is fine. I mean, it's easier for me if I don't feel like getting up and getting ready to go out in public. But at the same time, I think that it took away that excitement of like, because I felt like everyone took movie night or movie time into like a big family thing. Like, hey, let's all go to the movie store and get movies. Like, it was such a like a very special, like sacred thing. I felt like, you know,
kind of like,
yeah, huge for me and my uncle. And I feel like the digital age of movies and TV shows now, like I said, it's really more convenient and it's like easier to just pop in, just sit there and do it. But I think it took away the sense of like adventure, like because you're going, because like I think I can speak for everyone almost on this. I don't think you truly ever knew what you're going to go get. You walked around for like 30 minutes looking, and you ended up getting something you didn't even know you were going to get.
Yeah, I
you know what I'm saying?
Every Friday night, I'd work every Friday night. So like my schedule on Friday nights was for a long time was like, you know, 4 to 10. And so what I would do is I would go into Blockbuster prior, because like I worked right across the street from Blockbuster, and right next to Blockbuster was a Chinese place. So I'd go in, get Chinese, go in and spend an hour literally just perusing around the aisles. And just, you know, looking at the sales, looking at the genres, looking at the new releases, like, you know, looking at this and also too, like creating conversations and creating relationships with a lot of the workers that were in here too, I think was part of the enjoyment, is that I kind of don't like this digital age almost that we live in, because it, like you're saying, it takes away the excitement of that moment. It also takes out the human element of it, because now, you know, you don't get to, I feel like you don't get to have that, you know, that human interaction, or, you know, now if I want to watch something, it's, I'm reaching out to people on Facebook. Oh, has anyone seen this? Like, no, what are your thoughts on this? Or I'm reading critical reviews. Like I enjoy going into things blind, not expecting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the convenience of the digital age, but yet at the same time, there's also limits, like Redbox and Netflix and Hulu, even to a point Amazon, there are certain things that you just can't get through those services that you are able to get a Blockbuster.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I just thought about this. You want to hear what they turned our movie stores into?
What?
Okay, so the dude named Steve, his old shop is now a barber shop. The movie gallery is now it's like Little Caesars and Dunkin' Donuts. And then the Blockbuster is now a karate place.
I'm like secretly totally weeping inside.
Barbershop, food, and karate.
Oh, man.
But yeah, I mean, just talking about it though, like, it makes me miss it, because like I can just vividly remember like me and my friends going in high school and reading video games, and then like one of my favorite movies that I never heard of until a movie gallery trip is an old like skater punk movie. It's called Wasup Rockers. You ever heard of it? Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it in a long time, but when I saw the case of it was in the cell rack. It wasn't even for me. It was in the cell rack, and I picked it up, and I just saw like. Like, it's based in, I think, California, and it's like a group of like Latino males who just rebel and just go skate, and like the front is like picture them skating and like one of them with a microphone like yelling into it. So I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. So I bought it, and it was like probably it's not like the best movie, but I really liked it a lot. But, like, stuff like that, Blockbuster and Movie Gallery, finding stuff that you never heard of, like me finding that movie, like, that's something that's missing now. You can still go on Netflix and find something you've never seen before, but you also have the chance to go and look at the trailer, look at reviews. Well, back in these days, you didn't have that. You didn't have that opportunity. You had to just wing it and hope it was good.
See, I enjoy the winging of that necessary of because I remember I love going and also finding films that I couldn't find anywhere else, because sometimes if you were lucky, Blockbuster was a big enough corporation that they could even import films that were exclusive to other countries. I remember talking to, you know, film aficionados that, you know, we'll get on the subject of Heath Ledger. And one of Heath Ledger's best performances was an Australian exclusive called Candy. It was a story where him and his girlfriend at the time, named Candy, they were heroin addicts. And it explored that reality of addiction, and it was raw, and it was real, and it was beautiful. And Blockbuster was the only place I could find it around, you know, where I grew up at. And so that, coming across that, was just one of those aisle strolls that, you know, I find. And I find myself, you know, now on Netflix, you know, kind of going through, not really at the same time. Like, I don't really go through Netflix the way that I did Blockbuster. You know, I don't look at the cover art and say, you know what, you know, this looks interesting. Like, but kind of on that, I still have all these conversations pulled up. Aaron White, who's one of the hosts of the Feeling Film Podcast, he says, just the crazy anticipation and nervousness of walking in and sprinting to the wall to see if a copy of the movie you want is there. And then if it's not, discovering something new you'd never heard of before.
Yes.
By browsing the shelves. Cover art meant a lot back then. And to me,
yes,
cover art still means a lot to me.
I'm with you.
I mean, I would pick up, you know, I would pick up films just based on cover art. I don't know how many copies of The Dark Knight I bought because the cover art was different than the ones that I previously had. And, you know, that's just part of the joy of doing it. And sometimes you had really great films, and other times you had really crappy films.
How about the temptation of being a little teenager and looking up the very top and seeing the boxes with the black card over it, with the Playboy bunny on it? You knew what those were.
Our Blockbuster didn't carry those, but our FYE did.
Dude, our Blockbuster and Movie Gallery carry those.
No. I think Hollywood Video carried those for us.
Oh man, I remember my uncle told me, "Yeah, don't look at those. You ain't old enough for those." I was like, "Okay." Well, that made me even more want to look at it. See what it is. Oh man, yeah, that which now you won't find stuff like that commonly out and open unless it is a FYE or something like that. Which those are hard to come by now too, around here. But yeah, that was some funny stuff back then with that.
Dave Courtney says, oh man, I miss those days. This was when people getting together with fellow movie lovers meant actually getting together with fellow movie lovers. I love that the way that he phrases that, because like you're talking about, like, Blockbuster on those days for Friday nights meant going in, renting movies, and then like sitting down with other people. I feel like nowadays we have so much at our fingertips, with cell phones and tablets and social media and Netflix and all of this content, that it muffles out when you kind of get into the discussion of films, or when you're talking about other areas of film, you kind of lose out on a lot of these because you're so distracted.
Oh yeah.
But he also talks about, he says it was more than just the Blockbuster, but I remember there was nothing like heading out on movie release days to try and snag a copy of the most anticipated movie. That would involve first walking down to mom pop stores to see down the street from us and see if they didn't have there, and then heading up further down the road to Blockbuster. The best was actually striking out though, and because that meant the opportunity to browse the aisles for a hidden gem and hanging out and talking to fellow movie lovers for far longer than anticipated or intended.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that. And just,
yeah.
There's more conversations that had, but we're running low on time. So, what was your fondest memory of Blockbuster?
Man, I would say just like anytime I went in there with my mom worked there or after she worked there, I'd always have good conversations with some of the workers about video games or I'd be looking at something in the person near me. But yeah, it's a good movie. Check it out. Just kind of like your love for either a movie or a video game would spark a conversation with someone else who's into the same thing. Which is something, even if you go to Walmart or store to buy a movie today, that never really happens.
No, it was like
you just go, you buy it. Yeah,
there was something about that atmosphere that you could just strike up conversations, and it wouldn't just be things that you liked. It would also be like, you know, things that one person might like, but one person might disagree. It was like, is almost kind of like breaking bread almost with, you know, fellow movie lovers and fellow video game lovers, because I miss those days. Like I miss being able to go in. Like when I had Blockbuster, I had a lot of nights where like I would struggle with depression, and if I needed to, you know, clear my mind or needed to be alone, I'd pop music in, walk up the street to Blockbuster, and I would just browse the aisles, and it brought me like such fulfillment, such joy, that I think it was hard to replace that. Like nowadays, like going through Netflix, it's like I just don't feel that anymore the way that I did with Blockbuster.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And now, you know, even if I see a Blockbuster's logo, like I stop and just reminisce, because it's just one of the hardest things to let go of. I feel like it had such an impact on me as a child that, you know, being able to pick up a movie and just picking it up solely on the cover art alone and saying, I don't know what this is about, but I'm going to rent it. And just seeing so many different films that way. I feel like nowadays I'm starting to challenge myself more to kind of get in and do that. But it's just not the same. I feel like now.
No, when I retire from my job, when I'm like old, I'm going to make a movie store. Dude, that'd be so cool.
That would be my dream.
A small town where I live, it probably would work, because I mean, like, my uncle lives in a town called Hayden, just like not far from here. It's a really small town. They had a mom and pop shop up until I think he said like 2 years ago. He went all the time and got movies still, even though like there was Netflix and all that, but he would still go and get movies from it. And he was really sad when they stopped 2 years ago and they closed down and turned into something else. I think they're like a bank or something now, like a little small bank. But
I have a mom and pop store down here, or up here, I guess, since we're north of you.
I'm gonna Google later if there's anything around me. I like to go just check one out, just to walk in there. Be cool.
It is one of the best feelings in the world to just like be able to like go in and just peruse the aisles. But ours up here kind of sucks, ours up here kind of sucks because it also doubles as a secondhand bookstore.
Oh yeah.
So it's like very limited on the selection that it has. But I feel like also too, one of the perks of being in Blockbuster was the fact that you had, and I'm reaching for a DVD that I have right next to me, which just happens to be Captain America. They would be facing you outwards, whereas some of these mom and pop stores, they face you this way.
Oh no, it's hard to look through.
And I'm just like, I'm not gonna pick up something based on the side. Like part of the fun exploring Blockbuster was, you know, seeing it at face value.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
But what are your thoughts and what are your memories of Blockbuster? We had so much feedback from this question just reaching out to social media, so I apologize if I didn't get to you. But I'd be doing myself a huge disservice if I didn't mention this one. Francisco Ruiz over at the Retro Rewind podcast actually said that on his 18th birthday, went up and got a Blockbuster card, and it made him feel like an adult. And that's what I did. I came home on my 18th birthday, went up to Blockbuster, and got myself a card. And I just I held it in my hand like it was pure gold.
Yeah, basically it was. I had to go get. I had to go to that shop in Alaska and get one just to have one.
Well, you.
They don't have one anymore.
You heard it here first. We are we're planning a road trip, PS road trip, yeah, in conjunction with Victims and Villains to go to Blockbuster. But if people are listening to us right now and they're struggling with suicide, what should they do?
Hey, if you're listening to this and you're struggling or know anyone that's struggling, reach out. Reach out to us. And there's also, you can reach out to a lifeline, 1-800-273-8255, or text line if you don't want to call, 741-741. And suicide is...
10th leading cause of death. I forgot to give you that statistic.
Oh, yeah. All right. We're going to edit it out somewhere here. Suicide is 10th leading cause of death. 123 daily occur. 3,075 attempted daily. 44,965 yearly. And then 800,000 yearly internationally. One death every 40 seconds. We gave you the information for the lifeline. I'll do it real quick again. 1-800-273-8255 or text line. 741-741. Do not keep this to yourself. Speak up to a friend, to us, to these lifelines. I do not keep silent. Like, please speak up. There is hope at the end of your struggles. Please speak up.
There's always hope. That's the reason we publish the content we do. That's the reason that we've partnered with the Farsighted Network, where you guys can hear all our episodes. But where can people find you online, my friend?
You can find me at my Instagram with a different name than last time. The Changing of Times, and you can find me at Twitter at BrandonPSMC, and then sometimes you can find me hanging out on the Victims Facebook page doing stuff.
Sometimes when I allow it.
So what you told me the other day. But.
I'm just messing with you. Always welcome, similar to our buddy Dan Rockwood, but you guys can find. Victims and Villains, our parent show on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and
LimeWire.
Vero. I hope it's not on LimeWire. I mean, look, if people want to illegally download Hope as compared to, you know, getting on iTunes and doing it for free, go for it.
Yeah, go for it.
So check us out. Check us out, and we're slowly uploading our backlog onto the Farsighted Network, our new network and new home. We're also
shout out to them,
yeah, contributing more to writing and doing reviews for them. So go follow them on all of their social media. And until next time, keep chasing the 90s.
And please do follow my social media if you're a wrestling fan, because in the WrestleMania weekends next weekend, I'll be there at a lot of the indie shows. So if you want to keep up with what's going on in the indies, keep up, follow me, and Matt can show you some pretty cool stuff that's going on that you might not see right off the bat.
All right. So we'll see you guys next week or next time for more great 90s goodness and more lights into the darkness.
Goodbye.